please welcome Matt, Simon Seedy, Matthew Smith, and Sarah Braun.
All right, well, hello, everyone. Can you believe we are already heading into our last session of the day? My name is Sarah Braun, and I'm a director at Lear Corporation and also a DEC Young Leader Board member. I am honored today to introduce one of my mentors. His leadership style and passion empowers Lear employees, our family, to do our best every day. Matt Simoncini has served as President, Chief Executive Officer, and a director of Lear Corporation since September 2011. In his role, he is responsible for strategic direction and operational leadership for the company. Formerly, Matt was Senior Vice President and CFO, a role he had held since September 2007. Prior to September 2007, Matt has also held several other roles within Lear, including Senior Vice President of Finance and Chief Accounting Officer, Vice President of Global Finance, Vice President of Europe, as well as the Vice President Finance position for Lear's Electrical and Electronics business in Daimler Chrysler Division. Matt joined United Technologies, UTA, in April of 96 as the Director of Finance for the Motors Division, and at the time of Lear's acquisition in May of 99, he was the Director of Global Financial Planning and Analysis. Prior to UTA, Matt also held financial and manufacturing positions with Ferrari Kelsey Hayes and Horizon Enterprises, and began his career with Touche Ross. Born and raised in Detroit, Matt earned a bachelor's degree from Wayne State University, and in addition to his responsibilities with Lear, he serves on several boards, including the Detroit Economic Club. Moderating today's session is Matt Smith. Drawn by the opportunity to return to his home state, Matt joined 7 Action News in 2016. Before working in Detroit, Matt was a reporter and anchor in Omaha, Nebraska, El Paso, Texas, and Southern West Virginia. He got a start in television working in Flint, Michigan while attending the University of Michigan, Flint. And his award-winning reporting has taken him across the country and ranges from breaking news to politics and featured stories. So with that, Matt, the stage is yours.
All right. Hey, everybody stand up for a minute. We got to shake this off. Can we get the music playing again, or is it dead? Come on, shake it off. It's been a long day. First of all, half of you in the room are from Lear, right? So, all right, let's shake it off. Let's get ready. You ready to rock and roll, Matt?
Yeah.
Let's get them. All right, let's go.
By the way, you said you were going to liven it up right away.
I mean, you know, when they play you on with It's a Shame, you get start thinking, like, maybe it's a problem, but...
And anything goes still, right?
Anything goes. It's all on the record, and I have not been drinking yet, so we're probably pretty safe.
That was a long intro. You've done a lot of things.
Yeah, I can't keep a job. I was in Wayne State so long, by the time I graduated, my dad thought I was a doctor.
Well, so right off, we'll talk about relevancy. Long career, you've been all over, but right. You have to take stock around you, what's going on. What have you noticed throughout your career? What are the non-negotiables when it comes to what you have to have inside of you for leadership purposes?
Well, you know, first of all, let's have a hand for Sandy and Beth, who are fantastic, great role model leaders and great community leaders, and really are the real deal, and two ladies that I respect greatly. And what they were saying was exactly right, which is... At any given time in your career, you're going to be asked to compromise your moral compass and your family ethics. And look, to me, family comes first. I know that's like a buzzword or a phrase. But the job is as important because that's how we provide for our families. But you can never compromise your family or your ethics. For me, the regrets I have in my career are not professional. They're the times I wasn't a good father and husband. And so that's the constant. You ask me what the constant is, that's the constant. And there's been a million different variations of my career and locations in Europe and different companies and different roles and different responsibilities, but that's the constant, man.
do skills change over time? You have a constant. Is there things in your career that you've noticed have changed throughout it? Are there things and skills that you look back on that are more necessary now than before?
Oh, absolutely. What got me in the job is not what's going to keep me in the job. And for each of my jobs, and as I've gone through my career, there was different parts of my skill set or toolbox that that became more prominent or more important. CFO. Obviously, the technical aspects of a control environment and understanding SEC and the investor base. And there is an overlap with CEO, but if I try to be CFO when I was CEO, then I wouldn't be a good CEO. So, you know, through your career, you're going to lean on different aspects. And that's why it's so important for many of you in the room that are relatively early stage in your career. Your career is like building a house, and it needs to sit on a strong foundation. And the foundation is a diversity of experiences and skills. I never expected to be CEO of any company, but I wanted to understand how a company ran, what the value proposition was, and to have input to the strategic direction. And so when you're building your career, you're just trying to get different experiences because you really don't know the opportunities that are going to present itself. You know, as CFO, I don't know if you guys know the history of Lear. I know some of you are because the building's empty. That's how we filled the room. Lear headquarters in Southfield. But, you know, I never expected to be CEO. I took over as CFO. The stock was 35. I drove it down to zero. And then I filed a company bankrupt.
They kept you around.
And they kept me around. It's like, you know, career advice. So you never know when the opportunities are going to present itself. What I'm trying to get at is you can manage your career, but opportunities are going to present itself that you may not have expected. And the best thing you can do for any enterprise is to understand how they make money, work as a team, and work really, really hard, and then work on yourself. Education never ends. And I don't mean the formal aspect of it. I mean, learn from people. They talked about mentoring. I believe in mentoring, and I believe I've had a bunch of different mentors in my career, but they weren't contrived. They weren't, like, managed, meaning it wasn't like, hey, today go to room 3B, and that guy's your mentor. You know, it's just kind of like someone that you connect with, someone that's willing to invest time in you, ask them questions, follow them, and do it that way. And that's a form of learning as well.
You talk about mentorship. Who was your earliest mentor, and what did their advice mean to you then, and how do you view it now?
Wow. You know, it was always about trust your instincts. I've made some big mistakes in my career, and they're great when you own them. You know, you file them like, hey, throw your boss out a second floor window. Well, I owned it, you know, because that's what my instinct's saying. Drop this guy from a second floor window. All right, I just got him to the window ledge, and then I let him stay. Other times, you know, I took advice from people, and it didn't feel right. And so the mentoring advice is trust your instinct. Trust your instinct. Because if you're going to make a mistake, and you will make mistakes, everybody does. Hopefully you learn from them, don't make the same mistake twice. If it was your decision, then you can live with it. If you make a mistake and someone advised you and it didn't feel right and you did it, then you feel really bad. It's like, man, I knew not to do that and I did it anyway. So early advice in the career was, you know, trust your instincts. And I have. There's been different advice, like when I was freaking out when I first got named CEO because the stress was crazy, crazy stress. One of my mentors said, hey, you know what to do, do it, don't let it consume you. And think about that, that's right for all our jobs, because everybody's job is stressful, no matter what position you have, there's stress. If you know what to do, do the best you can, and move on.
You talk about basically crashing and burning. You talk a little bit about mistakes that can be made. There's a lot of young people in this room right now that probably have some in the rearview mirror, some ahead of them. What's one of the big mistakes that stands out in your career, and how do you look back on it now? What did you take from it?
Yeah, well, you think I'm joking about dragging my boss a second floor window in Europe and dangling him from it. Passion is a beautiful thing if you harness it correctly. passion, like, not managed is bad. Ambition is a good thing unless you become blind to it. So to me, the mistakes I've made and I continue to make are usually driven by passion. That's another way of saying anger or emotion. You know, sometimes emotion is good. I mean, my God, go through life with emotion. Go through life with passion. Run your career with passion. You know, love the company that you work for with passion. But when it gets to be too much, Matt, then it can be very damaging. And so trying to find that balance has always been a struggle for me. And yeah, I thought I ruined my career. I was working in Germany at the time. The guy was a complete total, you know, can I say it? Asshole? That's it, right? I just said it. He was an asshole. He deserved it. And, you know, I should have dropped him. but I went from being a high potential CFO to Europe to being a controller in Dayton, Ohio. So I had to start over again and work my way back up this corporation. And so, yeah, that was a mistake.
In what you took from that now, did that help propel you to where you are now? Or is that just
there's a guy somewhere? The windows don't open.
New building design. That's what we're taking
away from this. Hey, you know, I don't stand by the windows when I'm yelling at somebody. I would have done that completely different. I mean, look, the guy deserved kind of, he was not a very nice person. And I recognize that you learn as much from bad bosses as you do from good bosses. You learn what not to do. Yeah, I let my emotions get the better of me. I just had hit a wall and I didn't handle it well. And so now when I try to get, when I get that kind of upset, I leave the building. You know, and everybody's got to manage themselves and know what their limitations are. I, you know, for me, you know, I was raised on construction sites and in an Easter market. I mean, I thought that was normal behavior.
Speaking of the Easter market, you're from Detroit. You're proud of your history, your roots. Tell me a little bit about how Detroit shaped you and made you the person that you are now.
Wow. I'm a Detroiter through and through. I mean, I work around the world. I've lived in Europe. I always come back. Detroit's my home. I think it's bred us. For those of us that are from here originally, seeing the best of times, seeing the worst of times, not taking anything for granted, being humble, that Midwest kind of roots. I don't know how you can separate me from the city. I always come back to it. It's bred a certain hardness, I think, in all of us that have lived through these tough times. And now to see the resurgence, we're so proud of it. I believe, though, and just we can never truly be a great city again unless we fix public education. Otherwise, we're going to condemn a whole generation of kids to poverty. So, having lived through it, I think it's left a scar on me. Maybe it's a good scar, a scar that I'm proud of, but a scar nonetheless.
And I want to get back to the city. I want to get back to the economy and the bankruptcy. We got a lot to talk about there and dig deeper, but I do want to stick with this theme of school. I know there's a university hiccup that you might be willing to talk about.
Oh, get thrown out of Michigan State? Yeah, they take arson and assault real seriously up in East Lansing, I'm just saying. Look,
this is a real thing.
Going away to school isn't for everybody. I love Wayne State. I mean, for me, Wayne State was the right answer. You know, financially, culturally, academically, for me, it was the right answer. You know, nothing against the Sparties, and it's a great school, and, you know, another time where I can look back on it now and laugh, but it was pretty traumatic when you're the only person in your family ever go to school and you got to come home and tell your dad you got thrown out. My dad was Italian, cement man, so proud that I was going to school. And I had to come home and tell him I got thrown out. And, you know, so, yeah, that left a scar on me, but you recover. And Wayne State provides world-class education for those that otherwise wouldn't have the ability to go to school. So it serves a purpose, and I'm glad to see that it's back, it's recovering, and recognizing its roots.
And I ask that question because it brings you back to Detroit. It brings you back to the place where your roots are. when we talk about the city, we talk about the economic downturn, we talk about the bankruptcy less than a decade ago. You were part of one of the companies that also announced bankruptcy. At the time, you were the CFO. Were you prepared for that moment? And when you dug deep, what did you find in yourself?
Well, I don't think you're ever prepared for that moment. Because the realization that the people that hold the paper, basically in a bankruptcy, what you're doing is you're trading, you're getting people that own the debt to accept something less in trade-off typically of equity. What I didn't realize is they didn't care whether we were providing jobs. They didn't care that families depended upon this corporation. All they wanted was a nickel more for the paper that they would have gotten. So that's what you're up against. And for me, it was an incredible eye-opener, but it was an eye-opener in another way. People like to point to the fact that it was the biggest peak-to-trough change in automotive production history and say, that's why we filed. Okay, that contributed to it. People want to say that the financial markets were frozen. That's why we filed. Okay, maybe. I like to say we filed because we had a failed strategy that was poorly executed and we blame no one but ourselves. And if we don't recognize the fact that we made mistakes, we'll make them again. We grew without discipline. We bought companies, didn't integrate them. We quoted business below cost. These mistakes have to be recognized or you're going to do it again. And any organization, whether it's public or private, nonprofit or for-profit, their existence is not a birthright. There are great companies that no longer exist. You know, Pan Am, the standard in flight when I was a kid, right? I mean, does Kodak, are they even make cameras anymore? Magnavox televisions. I mean, just up and down the landscape. Burger Chef. Is there a Burger Chef? Burger Chef and Jeff? No? Anyways, so we can't take our existence as an entitlement, and that's what it taught me. And no, I was not ready. I was a scared kid going up against, you know, Wall Street and hedge funds and people that had the paper. And I'm not proud that we filed. I'm proud that we paid all normal course obligations in full and on time. And that's what I'm proud of in the bankruptcy. And we protected this great company and 150,000 families that count on it for a living.
You mentioned in there the companies that no longer are, that we all grew up with. We talked about Kodak, you talked about Pan Am, like the companies that are no longer there. Lear has stuck around, and we're talking about S&P 500 these days, and the top companies are fresh, they're new. A few decades ago, they were old hat. How does Lear stay relevant, and what do you attribute that to?
Well, first and foremost, it's team. You got to have the best team. In whatever organization you're in, you got to have the best team, and you got to treat them well and give them the environment where they can thrive. Because if you have the right team, you can address any challenge. And by having the right team, it also means listening to the team and accepting diversity of thought, diversity of gender, race, sexual orientation, because that's how you get the best ideas. In our industry, things are changing rapidly. It's a convergence of tech and automotive. And I find this to be extremely exciting because we're going to change the world together as automakers. We're going to change the city, we're going to change the industry, and we're going to change the world. And now's the time to grab it and move forward. And it all comes from creativity, innovation, not just throwing money at problems, just being smarter than your competitors and working harder at it and having the best team. And if you do these things, you'll survive. I will point to every failed company and say at some point there was not diversity of thought, they did not have the best team in the industry, and they did not let their people grow. And if you let that happen, the rest takes care of itself. I mean, look, anybody can buy equipment, trucks, factories, whatever. It's the people that run it. And if you have the best team and you treat them well and pay them well and give them a voice, you'll survive anything that's happening. Now's the time to be in this industry. Now's the time to be in this city. We are going to change the world right here in the city of Detroit. I firmly believe it. This is the opportunity we've been waiting for. We need to seize it, the convergence of tech and automotive. And oh, by the way, we make things. We design things. We provide jobs. I mean, it's a fantastic time to be here. It's just going to be a challenge. But all of you that are out in the room, I look at the talent in this room, you guys are so much further ahead than I was when I was at that your stage in my career. I know if we give you the chance to run, you'll take this opportunity and just convert it.
You talked a lot about teams. You talked about what you learned from falling down multiple times. You've got a room full of hundreds of people. They want to stand out. You talked about not being too ambitious. What is the goal to promote yourself while not overstepping a boundary?
You know, be compelling by not being compelling. If you try to be compelling for the sake of being compelling, then that's detrimental. To me, you will get noticed in any organization that is worth working for. No matter how big or small, you'll get noticed by being outstanding at what you do and trying your best and putting work as a priority. Look, man, if you want to party, party. Make it a priority. You know, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that's what you want to do. That's fine. That's cool. If you want your career to be a priority, then make it a priority. You will get noticed, believe it or not. I mean, to me, what makes a person stand out is not the tangibles. It's the intangibles, meaning teamwork, honesty, integrity, being somebody you don't mind being stuck in an airport with for 5 hours. These are the things that make you stand out. And, you know, it will come. Sometimes it feels like it takes a long time, but it will come. Opportunities will present themselves. And if you get stuck, give it time and then leave. Sometimes you do get stuck in an organization. You know, if after you're done kicking ass in the local market, they don't move you to Chicago or they don't move you to New York, leave. Right?
I'm staying.
Because I know media,
my
right?
My bosses are here.
I'm just saying. I know. You realize the advice works in media, too.
You keep coming back to these values, these values and coming back from things. What were the most important values so far in your career, and what values are you looking towards now, or are you gravitating towards at this point?
Well, honesty and transparency in everything you do. You have to be honest, because I think people will figure it out if you're not. And you can be the smartest individual in the world, but if they question your motivations or your honesty, you know, I worked with a lot of hedge fund folks, and there's a lot of hedge funds that own Lear, and one in particular I really liked, and people don't like this individual. He's well-known, and we won't use his name. But I liked him because he was honest. If he could make an extra nickel selling my mom, he would do it, and he made no bones about it. To me, that's a level of honesty. I didn't agree with him, but honesty and transparency, right? So I think honesty and transparency always comes back to the mix. And I think you have to have it. And if you don't, ultimately, people will find out and not respect you for it.
I want to talk about Lear Young Professionals. I know you guys have had long discussions. You have surveyed the group.
Yeah.
You've talked with them. We work in a society now, there are just multiple generations all within a room. Everything from Generation XYZ to post-millennials now coming into the workplace. How do you keep everybody together? And for those that are in here that are trying to rub elbows with these people but also not disrupt, what's the best advice to keep these groups together? How do you succeed with a varying age within the workplace?
Well, I guess empathy. Is that a word? Empathy? Meaning, you know, it works both ways, right? For an old person like myself, I need to understand and put myself in the shoes of folks that are younger, 25, 30, that are ambitious and anxious to get their career started and see a path forward, right? I need to understand and remember what that was like. In the same token, if you're in that situation, you have to understand what it is for me as a CEO to look at somebody that's 50 years old, maybe 55, that has dedicated his life to a corporation or her life, that is in a position that may be blocking promotion, and should I terminate that person just because of age? And these are real life questions that we have as executives of corporations. So we're trying to balance the different needs of different people, but you know, it's hard at times to balance the conflicting kind of desires of the different age groups. the question I get all the time, Matt, is, you know, I want to work from home. Yeah, so do I, you know, especially when I'm hungover. Unless Mona's home, my wife. I don't know how to make that work, but I understand that desire. And we're trying to do that because we understand it's important. So I would just say try to put yourself in an outward mindset.
We've definitely heard about Europe today. I think we heard a little bit about that. Would you do it again? Would you be willing to travel overseas?
Oh my God, yes.
What'd you take from it?
When I was asked to go to Europe the first time, I was 29 years old, and I remember my boss said, I thought I had the world by the tail. I had a house on 7 Mile in Detroit, and and my boss came to me and he goes, man, what do you think? The world begins and ends on the east side of Detroit? And I did, because I still hang out with the guys I went to kindergarten with. And you didn't bring up the fact I flunked first grade. Best 2 years of my life. and my mom, Italian mom, oh, honey, you're so smart. You must be the smartest little boy. And I did. By going to Europe, you understand that this is a small world, but it has multicultural world. It opened my eyes in many ways. Same thing with Asia. I think it goes back to an earlier statement I said today, Matt, which was build your foundation getting a diversity of experiences. And, of course, living abroad is a diversity of experiences. And if you're lucky enough to have that opportunity, don't try to recreate Detroit and Frankfurt or Munich or Shanghai or wherever you get sent to. Accept the cultural differences and learn from them. I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was fantastic.
One of the sessions earlier today was talking about superpowers. We're not asking you to jump over buildings. We're not asking you to deflect anything. I know.
I noticed the socks. You guys get a picture of the socks. That's Superman socks.
I wasn't thinking when I got dressed where we were heading. What are your superpowers?
Oh, my God. You should see me eat pasta. go do a plate of pasta like nobody's business, you know. I'm great on a crap game, and I can chain smoke while drinking. I mean, I'm able to attract opportunities that you shouldn't have. I mean, I don't know. My superpower is I'm lucky enough to lead the greatest team in the industry. That's my superpower.
Speaking about that team, what advantage does that give you in the marketplace?
Oh, we're kicking everybody's ass. Are you kidding me? The last thing you want to be is a competitor to Lear Corporation. And we're not done yet. Confidence to walk into a room and know that we've got it together because I've got the best team behind me. It's like, you know, running a corporation, man, is like high school, right? The gossip and, you know, who's getting paid what and what's happening and it's kind of like a high school, right? It's like walking into high school dance knowing you got the toughest guys on your shoulder and giving you the confidence to talk to the pretty girls. That's what it's like.
How do you gain that confidence? Not everybody has
it. Am I going to have a job at the end of this thing? Are we running tape or what? Hopefully there's no Lear board members here.
when you're walking into that room, take yourself back to 25 or 30. Was the confidence there? Did you have to fake it?
Confidence. Actually, it's a great question. The hardest thing for me to do as a child of a cement man that never went to school was to accept the fact that I could be as good as anybody else that went to school. That my Wayne State degree would hold up to others. That why not me? And so I would say, you know, it's easy to say, yeah, I was overconfident. Reality was, it was the opposite. I was scared. I'd never been inside an office building before. I didn't trust that I was good enough to have any job or responsibility. And then as you're achieving, you're building confidence. So, you know, I guess I would say my advice is, you know, I think the ladies before me said, have confidence in yourself, have confidence that you're as good and good enough to be in positions of authority. That was outstanding advice that Sandy and Beth gave. And it's true. It's really true. It's really true. And have confidence. For those of you that grew up in Detroit or Detroit area, you have something special in you. And don't forget it.
When you look to build your own teams, what are you looking for in individuals? How do you find it? How do people portray that to you?
Well, it's a gut feeling. I'm not always right. You know, first and foremost, the tangible skill set is important. And by that, I mean you got to be qualified for the job that you're trying for. I'm looking more for the intangibles, which is, you know, passion, desire, teamwork, and honesty. And I trust my instincts, and sometimes we're wrong, and hopefully we're more right than wrong. I like people that don't oversell. Like, I get resumes for students right out of college, and it looks like they were running AT&T or GE. And you don't need to do that, man. If you cut lawns, cut lawns. If you're a bartender, say you're a bartender. Each one of those experiences actually are very important, dealing with people. Working hard, getting up early, cutting lawns. That tells me something about yourself. So, you know, the way to impress me is just to be honest about it. Say, I've never been in office before. You know, because I understand that. And I think people understand that.
We're running down on time here. So we've covered a lot of ground. What to you stands out as the most important thing that we've been discussing today? What if you could only have one thing for people to pull away from this discussion that we've been having? What do you want them to take away when they walk out of this room?
Other than family and your religious beliefs, because I kind of think of that as family, the most important thing in your life is your career, because that's how you're going to provide for your families. Love the company you work for, and if you don't, find another one.
I hate to tell you, but it's not done for you just yet. You're almost too honest. There's going to be some more questions for me from the audience now.
All right, let's go. Let's light them up. I'm a lot better if I had an adult beverage, I'm just saying. Like, did I say that already once or twice?
So, Matt, I think we all know how much of a passion you have for the city of Detroit. And we're wondering, as young leaders, how can we make the greatest impact in our Detroit region?
Well, one, you're all ambassadors for Detroit, right? You're here, you're ambassadors of Detroit. And to me, the future of Detroit is going to be able to attract the best talent. I do believe that we are in a race for relevancy. And as the autos converge with tech, it's important that we grab that opportunity. In order to grab the opportunity, we need to recruit the best people to Detroit. So you guys become ambassadors for the city of Detroit. Sandy and Beth, sorry to keep referring back to you guys, said give back. You have to give back. It's a moral and ethical obligation. Give back to something that you're passionate about, but the needs to give back are astronomical. So find something you're passionate about and give back. And I think that's the two ways that we transform the city or continue to transform the city.
Great, thank you. So Lear is very large corporation. We're in 36, 38 countries, 160,000 employees globally. How are we innovating as a company, you know, within being so large?
Well, innovation is going to take different forms, because I don't think the days of just throwing money at R&D are over. It doesn't work. You have to be different and clever, and you need to open up. To me, you talked about the 160,000 employees of Lear Corporation, giving them an avenue to innovate, even if they're in finance or payables or HR. Give them avenues to innovate, because innovation comes in different ways. It could be process, or it could be organization and product. The other thing is connect to innovators, business incubation firms, tech towns, universities. Give avenues for those organizations and students to innovate, connect to innovators, right? And I think that's the way. The acquisitions of the future are going to be different. People are buying intellectual property and engineers, software engineers, as much as they're buying revenue streams these days. So there's a lot of different ways to innovate, but I think the days of just throwing money at R&D and hoping something hits are over.
I think that's a great segue into our next question, because, you know, Lear invested in 119 downtown, and you know, what drove Lear to make that decision, and where do you see Detroit in 5 years?
The reason to invest in what Sarah's talking about, 119 is our Detroit Innovation Center. It's in Capitol Park, and we have another building too that's on the verge of being open. I just heard this morning that's over in Paradise Valley. I felt that we needed a better connection to the city and the innovation that's coming out of the city and the designers and the software engineers that are in the city. And also, we needed to leverage the close proximity of the College for Creative Studies and Wayne State, especially now that we have the Q Line. And I thought this was a great place. It's out of the day-to-day that we get into as automotive suppliers. And it's just a place where you can collaborate and innovate and leverage the universities, and that was the idea behind 119. And by the way, what's happening in downtown Detroit is phenomenal as it relates to design and innovation and software, and try to tap into that vibe. That was the thought process.
All right, I think we have time for one more question. And after you leave here this evening, you are getting honored as one of 10 Michiganians of 2017.
The bar was low this year. Should have just gone by with nine.
So what does that mean to you, being honored?
One, I'm humbled, incredibly humbled. In some ways, I'm embarrassed by the recognition, because what I do is off the shoulders of the executives from Lear Corporation that make the money and do the things that allow me to give back to the community. I mean, pardon me, I'd like to actually be known as the CEO that makes money as opposed to the one that gives it away. But it's my hometown. My hometown paper, I grew up reading it. I grew up here. It's kind of neat, but I'm kind of embarrassed.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you, Matt, today, and thank you, Matt, for moderating. Everyone, please give them a round of applause. Thank you.